Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing A Real Pain, Juror Number 2, Wicked, Gladiator 2, and Moana 2. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecca and super producer Craig Stanton. Gentlemen, hello.
Well, Bill.
Good evening.
It's Thanksgiving, and I'm thankful that there is no original IP in fucking Hollywood, apparently.
Yeah, I realized God that as it. I was saying it.
Everything's a sequel. I'm good, Bill. Brutal. How are you, boys? How are we doing? Happy Thanksgiving. Cheers.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
By the time this episode goes out, our listeners will have already celebrated their Thanksgiving, so I hope they all enjoyed that for those who celebrate.
Indeed. Indeed.
God bless.
And I believe that the horror comedy Thanksgiving, entitled Thanksgiving, is now on Netflix, I believe. So feel free to check
cool.
that out. Gave that a maybe yes I'll, last year.
Maybe I'll do the time. I was on Reddit, and this guy, the post was, help me pick out the best shirt for my Thanksgiving dinner with my family. And they just got more aggressive and crazy as you went through. Like, one of them said, like, thank God for critical race theory. The other one said, like, they were just batshit crazy ones. And the comments were hilarious. So hopefully everyone has some normal Thanksgiving dinners with their families and nothing too crazy.
And some unoffensive attire.
Exactly.
To go along with it.
AJ, you're our resident chef. How do you prefer to prepare your bird? You ever do a deep fry? What do you do?
I've done a deep fry, I've done a whole bird, and I've done a spatchcock. Do you want me to power rate them?
Sure. What is that second category you said? Whole, but aren't they all whole birds?
Like a whole bird, like, well,
in the oven?
Just genuine, like just a straight up butterball in the oven. So fried, yeah, sure. Regular, gotcha. And then spatchcocked. Fried turkey, one done well, is you basically see God himself or herself. Incredible. Two, I think I like a spatchcock second.
Okay.
I think you get a little bit crispier parts. It cooks a lot quicker because it's like squished spread down. And then like your basic
way more
butterball turkey, spatchcock, just like that.
Just like that.
Here's the thing with turkey. I love turkey. I'm actually a big turkey guy, but I know a lot of people that are like, hey, if turkey was that good, we would just eat it all year round. Mm-hmm. I say there's nothing stopping you.
I am that guy. You just quoted me. Thank you.
Yeah. What about
just
deli and turkey?
Insufferable hot take artist.
Are you just ever like drunk at your refrigerator, just shoveling handfuls of like really thin cut boar's head oven gold turkey into your mouth? Crying?
No.
Yes, obviously.
No. I love the specificity.
Roll it up like a big doobie.
Just painting a word picture
mustard
for us.
Jeez.
No, AJ, I can't relate to that particular hypothetical.
Okay.
But
so
I do
what's
love
your
mashed
favorite
potatoes.
Side then?
Okay. Mashed potatoes, that's the go-to.
Oh, all right.
What?
They're just gross.
Mashed potatoes are gross? And I'm the one with hot takes?
Is that a hot take?
I think that would be considered firmly a hot
mashed
take.
Mashed potatoes are generally
mashed
a
potatoes
beloved
that
food.
Are not
beloved
mashed
food.
Potatoes that have not just been like riced, put through a ricer, and then doused in cream and butter, like 20 seconds earlier, just become basically concrete. You could spackle your walls with them.
Well, you taught me the ricer trick.
And your potatoes, your good mashed potatoes should be basically equal part potato to butter. Like your chest should kind of start constricting with every spoonful.
That's correct.
If it's good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big stuffing guy, but I like bread. As you can tell by my physique.
Sure.
Vic, you can tell by my physique, Vic.
Just you and me, Vic.
Just me and you, Vic.
We know who runs
Greg,
these
what about
streets.
You? What do you do?
That's a pretty
for,
good penguin.
Thank you. For what's like an Irish Thanksgiving? Do you just like throw potatoes at each other? And
Just a lot of flavorless food and long-term grudges that no one knows the origin of.
Love that.
Wash it all down with some Guinness.
Yep. What's your go-to Thanksgiving food, Craig?
I'm a big stuffing guy. I like turkey, too. I don't eat roasted turkeys in whole bird form all year long, but that doesn't mean I don't like it when the time is right. Big turkey guy, big stuffing guy. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good for me.
Love
fried,
that.
By the way. We're doing double barrel fried turkeys.
Ooh, baby.
Two.
Different rubs and preparation, or are you just firing a boat the same way?
That I don't know. It's just a sheer question of volume is the reason for the two, not like, you know, experimenting with different flavors.
Just keep it clear from the house.
Double barrel, baby.
Clear from the house. You got to be the local safety inspector there.
No. As long as that shit's not frozen, you're good. You're good. Uh-huh. As long as it's not frozen.
All right.
Thought of. Well, boys, I hope you both have a phenomenal holiday. And we have an action-packed episode, so let's get into it. Bill, Craig, I did it. Hannah and I finished El Pinguino.
Quack. You finally got there. What did you think?
That show had no right being that good. Zero. Mm-hmm. Whoever had that idea and then greenlit it and said, no, like there's something here and you should dig into it, give that person a raise. Like, yeah, give them all of the money that they make from this, because it's truly had to be a gamble that obviously paid off. But holy shit, there was only a couple things I knocked on, but the way it built up, crescendoed, and then came back down, and then is going to lead directly into the next Batman film. Like, bravo, man. What a great goddamn TV show.
Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. Loved it.
And to your point, AJ, that you sort of implicitly made is that it got better as it went.
Yes, you know? True.
And not just because the story picks up like most shows should, but I think literally the episodes themselves, like the quality they kept on stepping up, like the intensity, the quality, like it was just, it got better as it went for sure.
Are we doing spoilers? Are we doxing and spoiling?
I don't think we should spoil just yet.
Not just yet.
Can I just say one thing that is like a borderline spoiler, but not really? I think fuck it. It's Thanksgiving. It's our, okay. If you don't want to skip it, if you don't want to listen to this.
Skip it. 15 seconds. Go.
I think my thing and my takeaway is tonally the way they set up the Penguin character is this back and forth in your head is like, is he the savior? Is he the good guy? Is he the bad guy? Is he... Mm-hmm. Awful. And then Sophia comes in. It's like, no. The Penguin is the good guy. She's the bad guy. And as things develop, you're like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. No, he's a Batman villain for a reason. Like, you get your payoff on the end on why he is the Penguin. And you're like, fuck, I feel so misled, which is what he does through the entire season with everyone else. He tricks them.
Right. And it happens to the audience in real time.
And that's when I was like, oh my God, what a payoff at the end. Like, I'm disappointed, sad, angry, and all of the above, but that's how everyone else feels on the TV show.
Yep. Like, and you end up aligning with Sophia more than anybody. She's the hero.
She's the victim.
Yeah.
She's the victim, Jerry.
Yeah.
So I think I probably said like a dozen and a half all caps text messages to our groups as a group as I was watching it. But the last one was, holy shit, Batman 2 in the snow, Gotham at winter. Like,
yeah. Fuck, ready. Like, so ready.
So, I didn't get that message then, and I still don't now. What are you talking about in the snow? Is that something that we know is happening?
Yeah. The way they set it up was the fact that, like, this season starts basically the minute after Batman 1 ends.
Yeah.
They're going to do Batman 2 the second after the Penguin ends. Like, it all is, it's one cohesive movement.
And we know that that's wintertime for some reason?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was pissing snow at the end of the episode, dude.
They also have had, like, a lot of announcements. I mean, I don't know if it's official announcements, but very concrete announcements that Matt Reeves has confirmed that it will be set in wintertime.
Winter.
Interesting.
Oh, my God.
It's a winter wonderland. God.
Mr. Freeze? Question mark.
Hey, Vic. Hey, Vic. It's snowing out, Vic.
Yeah,
I started walking like him around the house just to piss off Hannah.
Oh my God!
I had a fucking bum leg. But yeah, it was great. Thank you for pushing me to watch it. It's up there with True Detective season one, like the great first season miniseries of HBO. Mm-hmm. And HBO again. Craig said it the other week. They rarely do something if. You know, they do something when they know it's going to be a home run, right? They don't just half-ass something. They really develop truly good shows, and this is another great example of it. So, hell yeah, HBO. Bill, what about you?
I recently threw on Drive again.
Oh, shit.
I feel like I watch this movie, like, I don't know, every 2 years, and I fall in love with it over and over again every time. I just fucking love Drive. I love it so much. Like, you have the cold open car chase, then the opening mm-hmm. credits hit with that score, diner, and he gets approached by a previous crook that he drove, and he threatens him. It's like my favorite scene. It's still maybe Ryan Gosling's best role. It's just so stylistic and cool, and I just freaking love it. So it was just one of those nights where I didn't feel like trying something new or having to think about it. I was like, I'm just going to put on an old favorite, and I fired up Drive, and man, hits every time. So
you had a, you seem like a guy that has a jacket in his closet. Do you?
The Scorpion jacket? I've thought about it many times, including, again, when I watched it recently. I was like, but I just, like, as much as I want it, I just don't know when I would actually wear it. Like, where would it be applicable? But it's so awesome.
You'd have to frame it and just put it up like
art piece. Get a sign or something. But yeah, so Drive.
Or if you were ever going to take your Tesla off of a fucking ramp or some shit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great jacket to die in a blaze of glory.
That would be sick.
Cool. All right, Bill. We haven't had news in a few weeks, but we do today. So it is official. Conan O'Brien is set to host the 97th Annual Academy Awards. This comes after months of speculation about who may host or if there will even be a host at all. So, Bill, your reaction?
I think Conan will be a fine host. I think that his success will come down to, like, the skits and the videos, because that was always the best part of his late show. Like, his monologue was always just as hacky as anyone else's late night monologue. And I feel like the Oscars lately have tended to lean towards stand-up comedians because they want a good monologue. But I think Conan will be the opposite. I think he might open with a musical number, hopefully instead of a monologue, like, you know, some monologue or monorail play, even fit it within that. So I have a concern about that, but I always have that concern. So overall, I am fine with the Conan pick, and I will watch and hopefully be pleasantly surprised. What's your thought?
Yeah, like, it's kind of like a do no harm approach, right? He's just a guy that is funny. He'll flirt the line, but he won't be the person that will habitually cross it just to do it. Like, he's not going to be like a Ricky Gervais or anyone like that.
An edgy comedian.
Yeah. He's not some like edgelord dude. He's Conan. Like, he's smart. He's witty. It will be fine. I think Conan, kind of like how you feel with Will Ferrell, I have this thing with Conan where his shtick after a while gets kind of old and repetitive, you know, like the dry delivery into like the manic expressions and the hair flips and the quaffs and then back to being like normal. Like, he just does that on repeat. And after a while, it just gets kind of boring. But again, he's super talented. He is a phenomenal writer and creative mind. So to your point, if he can bring some of that into the pre-recorded skits, I think it'll be fun and entertaining.
Yeah, it's a safe bet. And I think because Conan, unfortunately, with the whole Tonight Show kerfuffle, has kind of fallen out of mainstream for a while. So, like, I haven't seen Conan in years. So, for me, the shtick getting old thing, well, I think that's faded. So, hopefully, it will feel new again to me. I can see what you're talking about, though, if you were watching him night after night. I get that for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Idzy. I didn't see it becomes I did see it. So we are filling in our filmatic cultural blind spots. Bill, what did you watch this week that you had never watched before?
I watched Kingdom of Heaven.
Ah.
Ridley Scott directed. So I was seeing Gladiator 2 this week, so I decided to go back to the Ridley Scott filmography and try to fill in any holes that were there. And so this was a historical epic about the Crusades, and Orlando Bloom stars in it along with a bunch of other great actors, Liam Neeson, Ava Green, like a lot of people in it. And it was good. I mean, it was fine. It's definitely like a quote-unquote guy movie, just like a lot of sword fighting, a lot of wish fulfillment, a lot of bloodshed, a lot of speechifying. And it was fine. It was a classic Ridley Scott historical epic. I want to give MVP credit to Ed Norton, who voices like the Leper King. And those scenes tended to be the most interesting in terms of writing and delivery. But glad I got around to it. I thought I had seen basically everything Ridley had done, but I clearly missed a few. So glad to fill that in. And yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Would I go back and watch it again? Not anytime soon, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen it since it came out, which was like 05. Yeah. But I do remember how great Ed Norton scenes are. And I believe he's actually uncredited as King Baldwin. Like, no one knew who he was until like way after the fact, which I thought was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Second thing is, did you watch the director's cut or just a standard theatrical
release? I just have a theatrical release at my disposal.
Well, apparently, from what I remember, is I guess the director's cut is like significantly better for the better than the theatrical cut, because it fills in some like the blanks and the motives on like what the why behind basically the whole movie starting right within the first 5 to 7 minutes. It fills in a lot of blanks on like the reason behind this specific point of view for the Crusade. So
yeah,
I don't think you're ever going to watch it, but if it'd be interesting to hear, you know, the difference. If you got into it of watching
it, I had heard about that director's cut being superior after I had already watched it. And then I was like doing like post research to see like how accurate is it. And like I was just kind of curious. So I started digging into the history piece. And that's when I saw a bunch of people say, oh, watch the director's cut. And I'm like, well,
yeah,
too late.
Shit.
What did you watch?
I watched Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the 1982 film.
I don't think I've seen that. Either. I've definitely seen clips. If I'm thinking, I feel like I confuse scenes of it with Dazed and Confused because I see clips of both of them all the time. So I'm not sure which one's which. So fill me in. Which one is this one?
This is the one with Sean Penn playing Jeff Spicoli, the
Spicoli,
blonde hair. This is a Spicoli movie.
Yeah.
I would much rather watch Dazed and Confused. It just didn't do it for me, right? Like, I wasn't born of the time with like mall culture and things like that. And it heavily plays into that. And I know there's cultural significance of the movie, but there was never a character or a situation or anything like that where I could like say like, damn, like, yep, I can relate to that. Or I find that hysterical. Yeah. I just thought it was okay. Yeah, I think it's Judge Reinhold, one of those A-list who became B-list actors that I think is just good in everything that he's in. Speaking of him, I watched The Santa Claus with my kid for the first time, and he plays a stepdad in that, the psychiatrist, and he's just so fucking funny. Like, he's just a funny dude who doesn't try to be funny, but the movie as a whole, nah, not for me. I'd rather watch Dazed and Confused.
The only sequence I know from Ridgemont High is that Spicoli orders a pizza delivery to the classroom, which is that's a good bit, but that's all I really know about it.
That movie too is like that Spicoli Mr. Hand subplot is known the most in popular culture, but it's just a small subset of the film, you know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
But it became such iconic and like that back and forth that it becomes, you know, part of the cultural world and zeitgeist. But
okay.
Well, not for me.
Well, I will not spring for that one anytime soon then.
We tried it. I tried it.
Hey, that's all you can ask.
All right, let's go on to Should I Go See It? This week we'll be talking about 17 films and only two are original. The first one is called A Real Pain. According to IMDb.com, mismatched cousins reunite for a tour through Poland to honor their beloved grandmother. The adventure takes a turn when the odd couple's old tensions resurface against the backdrop of their family history. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes. This got a yes from me. This is the only real original on this list. Jesse Eisenberg wrote and directed it, which is really cool. And
good for him.
So him and Kieran Culkin play the cousins that you mentioned. They kind of grew up like brothers. And so their grandmother passes away and leaves them money so that they can take a trip to Poland to see her old home and the camps that she survived during the war.
So Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so it gets heavy. So, you know, like the summary mentions, it's kind of an odd couple type of comedy. They're on the road traveling together. They're different types of people. Along the way, we learn more about them, more about their backstory, etc. Kieran Culkin, phenomenal. Like, knocks it out of the park. Laugh out loud moments. He really is what makes the movie and makes it engaging. And it's more on the drama side of dramedy, especially given the nature of the Holocaust backdrop, because like most of the movie, they're taking a tour, a guided tour, so they get to interact with a handful of other characters. But they're going to these actual places and they're showing them on film, and they're, and there's some really powerful moments from that. And, you know, it's really tight storytelling, a short runtime, like it's very focused. I love the ending. I think it was just a solid, solid little film. Like, definitely recommend.
Love that. Hour and a half. Kieran Culkin has become a force of nature, it seems like, the last few years after Succession. Yeah. Yeah. How close does he play his Succession character?
There's definitely traces of it, for sure. Like, that's part of his MO. It's part of his delivery. But this character is, I don't want to say more nuanced, because he spent so much time in that other character, I guess that wouldn't be fair. But it's a little different. It can get a little more intense from an emotional standpoint. More like Kieran Culkin's character in Succession towards the very end of the show. It's kind of like more like that than the early version. But yeah, it's similar because it's just who he is. But no, it's good. It's good. It's different. It's different enough.
And Jesse Eisenberg, we feel like we haven't seen him in a while. Wrote, directed, starred. Is it heavy-handed?
Is he right in this movie?
Is he too much a part of it? What's your take?
No, he was good. He was good. He's similar to Kieran Culkin. Like, you know what you're getting with Eisenberg. Like, he is Jesse Eisenberg. So he does his shtick. And he's, you know, playing himself almost to a degree, it feels like. But I think they both do a really nice job. I think they both carry it and make it worth watching for sure.
Love that. Next film. Juror number two, according to IMDb.com. While serving as a juror in a high-profile murder trial, a family man finds himself struggling with a serious moral dilemma, one he could use to sway the jury verdict and potentially convict or free the wrong killer. Bill, Clint Eastwood's last movie, The Man Is Still Alive at 98 and looks like a bag of shit. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes, you should. And okay. The man still knows how to direct.
Does he?
Yeah, he does. So this is a classic talkie. This is like the old days. Nothing crazy. It's just a solid script, and they act it well, and they shoot it well.
Okay.
And so Nicholas Hoult plays the lead. He's a juror on a homicide trial. And as information starts to come to light, he realizes he might be like more connected to the case than he anticipated. I'm not going to spoil anything else, because like, the whole movie is watching this unfold. But
oh, I feel like you just spoiled a shit ton.
No, I didn't.
No. I feel like
is Clint Eastwood saves the day with 1,000 machine guns. So just stay tuned for that.
No, Clint Eastwood directs it very workmanlike direction. Like, not a ton of flair, but that's not what the movie requires. It's not flashy. It's not over the top. Keeps it grounded.
It's a talkie. It's a talkie, Craig.
It's a good looking movie. It's well lit. It's got distinct locations. The acting is top notch, and I love Chris Messina. Like, whenever Chris Messina shows up in a movie, I get giddy. And I was thrilled.
Big Chris Messina fan. Yep.
He shows up as the defense attorney, and I was like, let's go. He was awesome. Your girl, Toni Collette, is the prosecutor. She's great.
God damn it.
They got J.K. Simmons on the jury. He's obviously exceptional. So everybody just knocks it out of the park. It's super engaging, enjoyable, old school filmmaking. I loved it.
Wow. No notes?
My usual note, like, they could have tightened it up. It drags a little bit in act two, because there's like different revelations as they go, and like, you could probably cut one of them. Like, you could have cut it up. But that's really it. Otherwise, I thought it was very good.
Similar to Conclave.
Like, it is what it is. It knows what it is, and it executes. And I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Now I want to watch it, but I feel like you spoiled it.
Stop. You have no idea. You won't know until you see it. And it is coming to Max quickly. This was a very limited release where I had to actually go into Boston proper to see this thing, because they don't think that's going to make... Warner Brothers is kind of brushing it under the rug for whatever reason. I think because they assume it won't make money because of the type of movie it is, and so they could use those auditoriums for something that will make money. So they just don't even put it out there to give it a chance. And so now it's going to be on Max like next week, basically. And a lot of people were very upset about the fact that a Clint Eastwood movie with this kind of star power is just getting completely ignored and not
brilliant business,
not promoted, not put out, not doing anything for it.
If you think it won't do well, ensure that it won't do well by making it extremely hard.
Well,
to see.
You know, I was going to say that I'm surprised that this wasn't picked up and distributed by Apple as part of in Apple TV. It was my first because it's not. You go online, it's not in a lot of theaters right now. Technically, distribution doesn't start till December 20th. It's not in a lot of places. It just seems like it's just weird. It's in this middle ground between like you should have just made it behind a paywall from the beginning rather than towing that line. I don't know.
And now the graphics or the advertisements they've put out call it a Max original, which is like the final slap in the face.
Jeez. Oh.
It's not good. It's not good. And it's just frustrating because everybody wants more movies like this, like movies for adults, essentially, just like straightforward storytelling. And then we finally get one and they don't even try to let it succeed in theaters to see if there's a appetite for it. It's anyway, like I said, I had to go out of my way. It was worth it. I was very happy I saw it, but most people will probably watch it on Max soon.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Let's get into some heavy hitters. The next movie,
Sequel Town,
is taking everything by storm, and that is Wicked. Wicked, according to IMDb.com, Elphaba, a misunderstood young woman because of her green skin, and Glinda, a popular girl, become friends at Shiz University in the Land of Oz. After an encounter with the wonderful Wizard of Oz, their friendship reaches a crossroads. Bill, should we defy gravity and see it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
2 hours and 40 minutes for a part one? Grow a set of balls and tell the entire fucking thing in one movie.
Let's talk about that for a second. So this is...
Let's talk.
This is not advertised as a part one, but to be clear, it is very much part one. It says part one when the title sequence comes up. It is act one of the musical, which when you see it as a musical, it takes like an hour and a half. They've ballooned that into 2 hours and 41 minutes, which is longer than the entire musical. But anyway, it is a part one. And overall, very good, very entertaining. Your mileage is going to vary based on your experience with the play. Everybody that I know who knows the play likes the play. They love the movie. And I know a couple people who went in completely blind had never even listened to it before, and they also really like the movie. So like it's connecting with people for sure. I had a couple issues with it, but a lot of my issues are the same ones I have with the play, which is there's only really a couple of songs that I really like. I think the plot with the animals is not the most engaging to me, especially when in this movie it's full CG animals that, to use an expression you like to use, the effects are going to age like milk. I have issues with some of that. But when the handful of amazing songs that are in it come on, they kill it. Those sequences are so good. And just like act one of the play, it ends with Defying Gravity. And the Defying Gravity sequence is the highlight by a mile. And any qualms I had with the movie leading up to that point were just out of my mind, jettisoned out of my mind as soon as I was watching, listening, and crying to Defying Gravity at the end of the movie. So it was great. Would I ever watch it in full again? No. Would I watch a supercut of just the musical sequences? Absolutely.
Can I ask you a question? How much of the is left in the runtime after Defying Gravity? 15? 30 minutes? 45 minutes?
Oh, no. Just like the play. Like it ends on Defying Gravity.
That's it.
Yes. Credits. Which I think is part of what everyone, I think part of what is connecting with people is that that's such a great sequence.
Yeah, and more.
It leaves you hanging. I know. To be like, but oh my God.
My problem is that with the original Broadway play is that the first act is the strongest. And I feel like everything.
By mile.
Everything kind of just falls down a landslide, like a very steep hill afterwards.
Agreed. I have no idea how they're going to do a movie of act two of this show because it is just scientifically worse than Act One. There's like a good song for good. I think it's a very good song. The rest of it is forgettable. The story takes a dark and uninteresting turn to me. I just don't like Act Two at all. So, and it's way shorter. So like at least the next movie has to be shorter. There's ain't no way they're dragging that out to 2+ hours. And so I'll see it. You have to see it. You got to see the complete movie. But yeah, that is a little bizarre. But could they have truncated it to fit the entire show into a movie? Probably. But they want to take their time. And again, having all that buildup to then, you know, finish with Defying Gravity. I mean, it works. I mean, the numbers bear it out. The movie's making zillions of dollars. It works.
Yeah. I don't know.
MVP is Ariana Grande, by the way. Just steals the show, inhabits the role, crushes it. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, let's talk about everybody.
Cynthia Erivo's very good as well. I mean, everybody's great. Oh, well, I shouldn't say everybody's great. They have Michelle Yeoh and Jeff Goldblum in this movie, and I love Michelle Yeoh. Love her. But like, they force her to sing. It's not great. Jeff Goldblum comes out, and I just start laughing out loud because fucking it's Jeff Goldblum, just being Jeff Goldblum. And they force him to sing too, and it's not the best. So it's casting, if you ask me. But the two leads, which are, you know, the cornerstone of the film, have tremendous on-screen chemistry, and they crush it.
So, like,
you know the show, you love the show, you got to see the movie.
Yeah,
not negotiable.
Aspects of the show. I don't know. I don't have a strong desire to go out and see this, and I don't know why. I can't tell you why. I just don't. And maybe because I'm so accustomed to, you know, like I close my eyes and I know the cast and I know everything and I know like what it, like I know what Wicked is in my mind, and it's not this full feature length movie.
You got to give it a shot. I mean, I'm with you there in the sense that I am so, the original cast recording is so ingrained in my mind that hearing slightly different versions of the music was a little weird. But yeah, when you that kind of goes pretty quickly out of your mind when you're combining that with the on-screen visuals and the choreography and the performances and everything else, it becomes less of an issue. Versus if I played the CDs side by side, like, yes, I would probably, it would make more of a difference. But when you're watching it in the context of the film, I didn't bump on that really at all. Like, it's a different version and you may like some songs more from one or the other, but it's not going to be enough that you're going to be like sitting there with your arms crossed, angry at the movie. Like, it's just a slightly,
I probably will though. You know me, like that's me. Like you said me. Like when I think of Wicked, I close my eyes and I can picture Kristen Chenoweth singing Popular and the places where she like laughs and giggles in the song as she delivers it.
That's going to be different.
And I know that Ariana Grande isn't going to do that. So now I'm already
angry.
She's going to
do her own thing, and her thing is great too.
Craig.
Two things can be true at the same time.
I don't know. I think it's a case-by-case basis with stuff like this.
Well, you're not going to know until you try it. So I highly recommend you watch it.
It'll be 17 hours long. Okay.
Next.
Next.
All right, fine. Speaking of Are You Not Entertained, Gladiator 2, a movie that we didn't need, according to IMDb.com, after his home is conquered by the Tyrannosaurus Emperors. Tyrannical. How do you say that word?
You
just said it the right way like 4 times in a row.
Tyrannical?
You said Tyrannosaurus, and then you went back to saying it the right way.
Hey, let's keep this in. Let's do it this way. After his home is conquered by Tyrannosaurus Rex Emperors, who now lead Rome, Lucius is forced to enter the Colosseum and must look to his past to find strength to return the glory of Rome to its peoples. Bill, I just saw sharks in the Colosseum. What the fuck?
Huh? Yeah. No, you shouldn't go see it. Did they really say Lucius in that write-up?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Spoilers?
Why?
Because they play with the fact that they use a different character name for the whole first half of the movie. They don't reveal it's Lucius till about halfway through.
Oh, sick.
I'm surprised they would put
way
that
to go,
in the
IMDb. Fucking losers. Okay.
Okay. First of all, I have a complaint about the viewing process of this film. Saw it in IMAX, okay? And they do like 3 or 4 trailers, and then all of a sudden they start to do like the intro stuff. And I'm like, oh, sweet. Maybe because it's opening day IMAX fan event, maybe it's a shorter opening. And then all of a sudden there's a 9-minute countdown that they shove in the top left corner of the frame. And they now spend the next 9 minutes doing behind the scenes footage and interviews with people and clips from the movie that I am about to go see.
Oh, that's not right.
It was absolutely infuriating. Like, worst case scenario for me. I would have rather had a full whack of trailers, but by any means. Instead, I'm staring at my feet trying to not listen to the movie that I'm about to see. Infuriating. Terrible idea.
Okay. Then the movie starts. Did you tweet someone or something?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, that's your fault.
So the movie starts. We get into the opening credits. And the opening credits are actually really cool. It's like this painted style animation that basically recaps the first movie. So it just takes
key
scenes. Well, just to, like, you know, get you up to speed.
Okay.
This movie is incredibly dependent on the first movie, in case you hadn't.
How so? No, this is a really important point. How?
Oh, it is the movie. The DNA of this movie is Gladiator 1. And that is what's so infuriating to me, because I have such a fierce loyalty and love for Gladiator 1 that then this entire movie takes the threads from that and just retcons things in and changes it and borrows from it and quotes it the entire movie. The entire movie is constantly referencing the original movie. They're talking about Maximus as if he's some, like, legend, and they're just constantly referencing how great Maximus was. And then you have Lucius, our main character, who is also from the first movie. And they just, it's bad, AJ. Like, my notes here are, I hated it, awful, really bad, waste of talent, constantly referencing
Wait. The Lucius played by Spencer Clark from the first one is the Lucius now that we see?
Yes, played by Paul Mescal.
What the Pedro.
There's even more to it than that I won't even spoil. That's even makes it even dumber. I'll tell you offline. It is bad. And they hit a lot of the same notes and a lot of the same structure and plotting of the first movie. It's just lesser.
Does Connie Nielsen come back and play?
Yes. She plays the same character as the first one. Yes. And it is.
I wish I had a piece of drywall and a Monster Energy drink so I could put my fucking fist through it.
I am so angry
right now.
The plot is terrible.
Can you tell I don't do well with change?
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It's such a waste of talent, too, because, like, Denzel is good. I'm going to give, like, the only
Denzel's
real positive
never
points
bad, dude.
I'm going to give are to Denzel. He's great. Okay. He knows what he's doing. Entertaining
Circle
as hell.
Gets a square. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's Denzel. Living legend.
He's a
Denzel,
master,
great. Palm, I love him as an actor. Miscast for this role. Then you have Pedro Pascal, who is always great, but again, his character is underwritten. He has nothing to do. So just such a waste of talent. So you're sitting there going, okay, the plot's bad. I hate it. Maybe I'll at least be entertained by some action sequences, right? We got fucking animals in the Colosseum and people fighting. And I mean, that can't be bad, right? Wrong. It can be. And it is. Most of the fights involve CG animals. The first fight is against a bunch of CG baboons. And then they fight a guy riding a CG rhino. And then they do the flooding sequence, which has CG sharks, which did they flood a reef for naval battles in ancient Rome? Yes, they did. Did they flood the Colosseum itself?
How the fuck
Unclear
are they going to get?
Where did
they get
sharks?
Gonna get sharks from the ocean?
Where did they get sharks? They didn't. It's so bad. So the fighting sequences are also not that good, and they're not even—they're a shadow of the first movie, which those action sequences still hold up. Because spoiler alert, no CG really, and it's just insult after insult. Hated this movie with a passion.
Okay. I mean, there's nothing else I can ask you because I'm just so disappointed, but I shouldn't be because the film Gladiator 1, I remember watching it on DVD at my buddy Jeff DeLuca's house and being like, holy shit. Like,
yeah,
like
I saw it opening day in theaters. I was in middle school. I got dismissed. My mom and I went, my mom used to love like sword and sandal type movies. And we saw it opening day and it was just fucking mind blower. And now this is what we're left with for the legacy. Yeah. Like it's, I wrote in my review, it's a sequel that I wish I never saw. Like I just don't
you know
that it's now connected to Gladiator.
Fucking asshole Ridley Scott did the same thing with fucking alien covenant. He tried to get too cute with it and try to connect everything. Yep. Try to put his dirty, grubby little hands. Fucked it all up. Greg's laughing at me.
He fucked up Prometheus. I agree. Prometheus I loved. And then I see Alien Covenant. It's like, what are we doing here? And it was the same feeling for Gladiator 2. Do not go see it.
All right. Speaking of fucking up sequels, let's talk about Moana. Moana 2, according to IMDb.com, after receiving an unexpected call from her wayfinding ancestors, which happens in the first fucking movie, Moana must journey to the far seas of Oceania and into dangerous, long-lost waters for an adventure. This is exactly the synopsis of the first one. Bill, kill me.
I know you should not go see it. And you're stealing my notes because it is a retread of the exact same first movie. Like,
wait. Let me wrap my head around this. Moana 1 comes out. We are a Moana 1 family. Everybody loves Moana in this household. Then they announce, hey, as part of Disney's reimagining, we're going to do a live action version of Moana with Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Maui. Okay. Didn't need it, but we'll watch it anyways. And while they're in production of Moana 1 live action, they announce that they're going to do a sequel of Moana 2 while the reimagining live action of the first one is still in development.
You're close. What? You're close. They started this out as a Disney Plus show. And then they decided, wait, I don't think we have a release for winter this year. Fucking wrap that up into a movie. Let's get that out. And so they made Moana 2 a movie when it originally began as a Disney Plus show.
But they could have made so much more money if they just made an episodic TV.
I don't know what to tell you. I will say you can feel a little bit of that TV show element to it for sure, including like a mid-credits scene that sets up next season, air quotes, in this case, a third movie maybe, I guess. But so first of all, just to backtrack a little bit, I gave Moana 1 a no, and I still haven't
heard. Oh, you did?
I haven't heard the end of it from a lot of
people. Didn't
realize
you were a big piece of shit.
Yeah,
you didn't know anything.
Yeah. I thought it was a decent movie with one really good song and one pretty good song. And that's it for me. It didn't do much for me. So I gave it a no.
What was your pretty good song and what was your okay? What were your...
Oh, I think you're welcome.
Can I read you the review?
Yeah. Oh, please.
November 25th.
That's why we pay a producer. Yep. Go.
It's a decent flick with two great leads and eye-popping visuals, but it's also too long by 20 minutes and could use a lot more humor. See,
true.
Instead,
not
Frozen.
That funny. Not that funny. As a comedy,
for a no, though.
Yeah, I was on the fence. I went no. I thought "You're Welcome" is a good song, and I thought "How Far We'll Go" or "How Far I'll Go" is a great song. Like, that's an all-timer. But as a movie, I thought it was meh. So anyway, I gave it a no. This one comes around and it retreads the same ground. It's the same thing. She sings a song about having to venture out past the island, and then she meets up with Maui, and then they fight a giant sea monster god in the third act. It's the same exact thing, except a less good version. And I didn't even really like the first version. So it was an easy no for me.
How did you say no when the first one had like that Shyamalanian rug pull at the end that Tafiti was the monster and the monster was Tafiti?
I don't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth.
Remember, he steals the heart of Tafiti and the island becomes like dead and dying. And then that monster comes from the depths of the ocean to try to steal it back. But at the end, we realize that Tafiti was actually the monster. When he stole the heart, it became the monster.
AJ, I don't have a human child, so I've only seen this movie once.
I've seen it
many years ago.
No,
I've seen it about 400
times. Probably 897 times.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So I can't relate there. I'm sorry.
All right, Bill. Script supervisor. This is your new title on the show.
Yep.
Fix it.
Oh, I keep it a TV show. You just put one song per episode. You make it a 5-episode thing and you're fine. And you just put it on for the kids in the background. It's great. Like, it's not a feature film. This is not a feature film. And the music, unfortunately, is extremely forgettable And Lin-Manuel Miranda is not involved. He moved on to other projects. So,
oh, well, there you go.
You lose any luster you have with the music. And yeah, it's not great.
Okay.
And in the year of the Wild Robot, it feels so uninventive and bland when you have, and when I'm watching it side by side with another, you know, animated that blew me away. And then you go back to this and it just feels so pedestrian. So yeah, easy no.
Get that shit out of here.
Yeah, cut it out. All right, Bill, what are we watching?
That was a lot of movies, boys.
That was a lot of movies. Of movies.
We still got a lot
have
to cover here.
We got have
a lot
you of seen Netflix. The sun in 2 weeks?
Yeah, at times.
Okay. Keep cooking, daddy.
I watched Dune Prophecy.
What's the deal with that? Are we on board?
I am not yet. So there's two episodes. I've watched them both. And there are times where it feels kind of like the movies, especially like establishing shots. They steal the Denis Villeneuve look. They try to make it match. And all the space shit is great. I love space shit. But the show itself is like kind of weak so far. The easiest comparison is to like Game of Thrones or even House of Dragon, where it's a ton of different characters spanning a ton of different space. And it's... what's frustrating about it a little bit so far is House of the Dragon takes place, 100 years and change from Game of Thrones. So yeah. They have a good amount of leeway to kind of surprise you, but you also get Easter eggs and you can kind of see where it's going to go. This takes place 10,000 years before Paul Atreides is born.
Oh, baby.
So.
You said 10,000?
Yes.
Four zeros? Okay.
Such an absurdly long time.
Yes, I know that. I know that.
10 years.
So it's like,
oh my God, that's so
there's
funny.
We're so removed that any bearing of what it might have on
yeah, I mean,
the
they're going to be riding
like,
around on dinosaurs over there.
So it just becomes like, and they're still starting to talk about prophecy and stuff. It's like, well, that all ends. The prophecy leads to Paul. Why aren't I just watching Dune? Like, why am I watching this? Like, it doesn't have enough bearing yet, at least, to really grab me. And also, the advantage that something like Game of Thrones has was the casting, where you just have this fleet of incredible actors for every single role. And this show, there's already a couple clunkers in there. So it's not grabbing me. I'm going to keep watching it because there's nothing else on. But like, it's not grabbing me as much as I really wanted it to grab me because I love those Dune movies so much.
Sure. But like, I feel like, can I say something without seeing the movie?
Go ahead.
There is so much context we get from the Bene Gesserit in the Dune movies because their whole idea is saving humanity, right? And we see that come to life in fruition in the Dune movies by Paul Atreides being alive and being the right. Messiah, so to speak.
Right, right.
So why do I need to go back 10,000 years to understand how they came to be in this desire to save humanity where we saw the end? We got the cliff notes and we got to skip to the end and the most meaningful part.
Well, that's the argument. I mean, that is, I guess there is potentially an appetite for people who are interested to learn how the sisterhood started and how the Bene Gesserit started. Because that's what this is, like the opening of this movie. First of all, the first like 40 minutes of this movie is basically narration and just putting pieces into place and all that. But the very beginning of it is like the beginning of the Bene Gesserit and like how it came to be. And now the show is moving forward of them starting to manipulate various leaders, the emperor at the time, played by Mark Strong. But again, without... any like way to forward connect it, it's difficult. Even House of the Dragon, I can look up a quick family tree and be like, okay, so this is like two people apart. I get it. Like kind of neat. Like this is so beyond. Yes. AJ, your hand raised?
Question. Yeah. Do you believe at some point during the season, they will mention the name Paul Atreides as like a, we're doing all of this because we know at the end of this, Paul Atreides will save humanity? Like, do you think it's going to be that on the nose?
Well, there already is an Atreides. Like, that family name, the Harkonnen name, like, those are all still in play here.
Yeah.
So, kind of. I don't know that they would say it. There's definitely visions in the show so far. So, you could kind of do whatever you want to do with that. So, maybe. But,
Not kind for of me. Anyone drinking the old sandworm liquid yet?
No, not yet. No sign. We haven't actually been to Arrakis yet, at least not in the first two episodes, but they still reference Arrakis. They reference whoever owns and rules Arrakis, rules the universe. Like, it's the same exact, we're in the same exact political situation 10,000 years before as we are 10,000 years later. So, I don't know.
Well, I guess it's the same thing with the House of the Dragon, too. Yeah, okay. We're skipping prophecy. All right. Good try, Dune.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll keep watching it. We'll see.
What do we get tickets for? What are we going to watch soon? Craig, what do we get tickets for?
Tickets. Hey, guys, I think we skipped something on the notes, but you need tickets?
We skipped something?
No, I skipped. I figured we cut it for time.
Okay. Oh, yeah, tickets, guys. Hey, tickets.
I have a ticket to see Y2K, comedy about Y2K.
Another, I guess, flashback, I don't know, movie. Okay, cool.
I lived it, so that'll be fun. And then I was reading an article today about all the movies coming out in December. This is obviously a huge month for prestige movies. Mm-hmm. And so the tricky part is, because there are so many movies coming out in this one month and vying for theater space, the show times are very limited already for some of this stuff. So I got to be very strategic, because I want to see Nosferatu. I want to see the Bob Dylan movie. There's a bunch of stuff coming out. And sometimes when you look at these listings, certain theaters have them, certain theaters don't. Even the theaters that do have some of them only have a couple shows a day. Like, it's going to get a little dicey, kind of, as they elbow for room at the Cineplex. So there's a bunch that I will be seeing and reviewing. I just don't have tickets in place yet.
Can we do...
You're laying the groundwork to put in a disappointing month here.
Right. I've already
champions
passed,
adjust.
I've passed my PR for most reviews in a year, and I am just running up the score at this point. So December's going to be locked and loaded for sure.
Can I ask one thing? Uh-huh. That week of Christmas and New Year's, I'll meet you wherever, but I would love to see Nosferatu with you, please.
I will see that with you for sure. Craig will be out on that one because it's scary. But I thought, are we going to do a Sigsy outing for the Chalamet Bob Dylan?
I thought you were about to say a Sigsy holiday party.
Yeah.
That's going to be a little bit more debaucherous. When's the Chalamet Dylan movie coming out?
Also Christmas Day.
Oh.
I'll see that with you for sure.
All right.
Not on Christmas Day.
Sweet. Oh, okay. Fine.
All right. Next episode. Okay, so, boys, happy Thanksgiving. Next episode, I got some Hallmark. Get some Hallmark movies up my sleeves for us, boys.
I had a holiday idzy in my back pocket ready to go.
Which is what? You told me what it was.
I've never seen Love Actually.
Which is a fucking crime against humanity. You've also, you son of a bitch, you've never seen White Christmas either, which is one of the best movies of all time.
Don't we also, aren't we going to do a Sigsy outing to watch the Kansas City Chiefs holiday movie?
Yeah, we should.
We
got to
take it
off.
We
got to
take it off. We can't be making social plans.
Okay, we'll figure this out. Everyone, have a wonderful, safe, happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate both of you boys a lot. Happy holidays. Happy holiday.
Happy holiday. Thank you all for listening. All right. Thank you for listening to this Should I Go See It podcast.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Please make sure to follow us on Instagram at Should I Go See It.